This is SiriusXM Doctor Radio.
From the heart of the NYU Langone Medical Center, here is psychiatrist Dr. Michael Aronoff.
And here we go again. I'm Dr. Michael Aronoff. This is The Psychiatry Show. We are live every Tuesday from noon to 2 Eastern Time. And we deal with all kinds of issues having to do with why people do what they do, human behavior, what's normal, what's not. To answer questions like, does something hurt? Is something embarrassing you? Is a loved one's behavior of concern to you? Well, if you're listening, you've come to the right show, because this is what we deal with. We deal with relationships, stresses, psychiatric disturbances, depression, medications, all the whole spectrum of things. We also deal with issues having to do with human behavior in general. Now, we always encourage your participation. And in order to do that, you got to call 1-877-698-3627. That's 1-877-NYU-DOCS. If you want to share a thought about what the topic that we're talking about now, or have some other question at all, altogether, share an observation, have a question, as I said, give us a call, 1-877-698-3627. Today, at least for the first hour, and maybe extending into the second hour, depending on what your interests may be, we're going to talk about something that's, I think I'm fairly safe in saying, it's familiar to everyone, and that is anger. Anger, a potentially life-saving emotion, if it presumably triggering a fight or flight reaction. But if you feel wronged, invaded, in some way threatened, there are also accompanying physical, emotional, and behavioral consequences that can lead to trouble. Now, I am very fortunate to have with me in the studio a frequent guest of mine, Dr. Betsy Scherer Levy, a licensed clinical psychologist with a full-time private practice in New York City. Full-time, Betsy.
Full-time it is.
Betsy, welcome again. She lectures and teaches in New York City as well. Her private practice includes work with children, adolescents, adults, and couples. That only leaves dogs and cats out, I think.
Absolutely.
And maybe you expand your practice a little bit to include them as well.
I actually have been thinking of dogs. There you go, Michael.
There you go. Her areas of clinical specialty include depression and mood disorders, anxiety disorders, learning issues, adolescent and young adult transitions, reproductive infertility, a whole spectrum, a whole gamut. So although we're going to focus on anger, and I'm going to try to keep some of your feet to the fire with regard to that, it's not exclusive. So if you have some other questions about something that comes up, please give us a call. Dr. Levy is with us for the next hour, maybe even longer, depending on what the schedule is like. She's been a consulting psychiatrist for the 92nd Street Y Nursery School for over 20 years. And she's also working on a new book, which means for sure, folks, she's going to be back with me on the relationships between young women, young adult women, and their mothers. A very topical subject for many people. Betsy, let me tell you something about an experience my wife and I had on Sunday.
Okay. We're all ears.
We're walking back from, you know, just walking around on a beautiful Sunday in New York City. Mm-hmm. And there's a horrible accident on Broadway, and we have to cross the street. But the police cars have blocked off both ends of it. And what apparently had happened was that the police, pursuing a call for help, for rescue help, had their sirens blasting, had the right of way, and a man, a middle-aged man, stepped off the curb, paid no attention to it, walked in front of the car, and got knocked down. He's lived, apparently. I don't know the specific. Yeah. That's not my point. Because living in New York, it has its challenges.
My point is
what happened subsequently.
Uh-huh.
We're standing on the corner, you know, waiting for getting an okay from the police to cross the street. And there's a young man, probably in his 30s, you know, reasonably well-groomed and so forth, standing with an older woman with a head covering, shawl, and so forth.
Okay.
And he starts to say a little bit out loud, almost as if he's preaching, but not really. It didn't seem like he was out of control. He starts saying, it's just like them, the police. That's what they're out there, to kill people. And he starts going on and on. And
wow.
What becomes more apparent as he goes on is a tremendous amount of rage. You almost think about,
certainly,
wait a second, are we thinking about somebody who is, you know, a covert jihadist who is, you know, right in our midst or whatever? A gentleman standing next to me rose to the bait. And he turns to him and says, how can you be so stupid as to say that?
Wow.
And by rising to the bait, I mean the anger got to him, the infectious quality of that.
Sure.
And then the two of them sort of decompressed, disorganized together, you know, nose to nose and so forth, until the mother, in some sort of accent, both the man who was
so
ranting
enraged.
Had a slight accent. And, in fact, the guy who was standing next to me, he then says, well, why don't you go back to the country you came from, you know, which immediately further inflames the situation.
Wow.
And he
could
then
he have
rises
thought of
to
something
the,
else to say.
Well, that's what I want to talk about anger, because we all have to deal with, we all have things, either they come upon us by surprise, how to deal with it in all kinds of circumstances, both in dealing with adults and also with children. Yeah, couldn't he have said something else?
Yes,
couldn't he have said
what you're highlighting there, Michael? And it's so important, especially we see every day in a city like New York. It's so contagious. The rage is contagious and infectious, and then it escalates and escalates, and very often becomes completely out of control. Now, fortunately, in the story you tell, it ends without further violent behavior.
Right. As far as we know.
As far as we know.
Who knows what is impacted in within each of those individuals and what they take with them elsewhere.
And who knows what happens later that day and how they behave to their loved ones. You're absolutely right. So anger is a really critical and serious issue from the moment one is born till way into their, you know, late years. And it's really my pleasure to join you today for this very vital topic.
Well, I'm very glad you have, Betsy. But the one thing we do not want to say is that there's something bad about anger.
Because anger is normal and inevitable for all of us. It's how we deal with it.
So in terms of your clinical experience,
yes,
give me some idea about the range of what you've experienced with anger as either a tool to be used or to be polished and to be used better than it has been, or anger that is a manifestation of some other problem.
Okay, well, you say it so well when you say a tool to be polished mm-hmm. versus a manifestation of another problem. I see both, Michael. I see patients.
Betsy, let me interrupt.
Yes.
By the way, any of you listening, your experience with anger, your experience like I and my wife had this past Sunday, where something is dropped on you, how you handle it, we're interested in the spectrum of things because there is not one single recipe. So give us a call, 1-877-698-3627. That's 1-877-NYU-DOCS. If you have a problem with anger, if you have a problem that you're concerned about, if your spouse or a significant other has an anger problem and you're at your wit's end about how to deal with us, give us a call. We've got an expert here in Betsy Scher Levy, who is terrific with, you know, and very experienced with dealing with this. Give us a call, 1-877-NYU-DOCS, 1-877-698-3627. Go ahead, Betsy. I'm sorry I interrupted.
Not at all. You know, I have an interesting perspective in that I've worked with young children, so I see the very early origins of anger and how they show themselves just in, you know, the three-year-old separating from the parent or interacting with young children, sharing toys, responding to rules from teachers and authority figures, all the way through the stages of childhood, adolescence, young adulthood, and adulthood in my private practice. And, of course, the anger as it manifests in a family, in a couple, in a partnership. And really what you said is so critical. Does someone come in and say, I'm very angry, it's interfering with my functioning, it's compromising my capacity to have good judgment, to stay cool, to function at work, to be in my marriage, to parent properly, to be a good friend, to be a good citizen, and I need help?
Or
has the anger already become disorganizing and really dangerous to their daily functioning and the way they experience the environment?
Or to put it even a little bit more mildly, but also problematically, has the anger been turned into, it's them, they're doing it to me, without thinking at all about my contribution in
yes.
terms of the interaction? Because it often involves and interaction.
Absolutely, and we can take it all the way to the other spectrum, Michael, unfortunately, which is when the anger is so intolerable that, as we see, one turns it only against the self, not appropriately against the self, as you suggest, owning one's activity, but only against the self in a dangerous way, and of course goes all the way to taking their life, which is not something that, you know, has become unfortunately unfamiliar to us here on the college campuses, et cetera.
Right.
And so anger could not be a more important topic. One needs to own their role in it. One needs not to punish themselves excessively. And one needs to get help using it in the social world appropriately.
With all due respect, and I do respect you enormously, those are easy words. We need to put them into operational way. How do we do that? How do we own our feelings? How do we own our participation in things?
Okay.
How to approach that kind of thing. Let me ask you one thing. To go back to what you first started with children, it is not an unusual challenge for families to deal with a temper tantrum.
That's right.
And the sensitivity involved in doing that is enormous because
Absolutely.
You can either help resolve it, you can help to at least point a direction, a pathway to building some alternative way of response, or you can make it worse.
Absolutely. And what you bring up about the family is the critical point here, which at every age. Which is that families need to know their children, see the signs of anger, help the child to recognize them and accept them and use them appropriately. Often, as we know, Michael, in a temper tantrum, the very best thing you can do is close the bedroom door, make sure everything inside that bedroom is safe, and say to the child, "It seems you're feeling very, very angry right now. I can't help you as much as I would love to, and when you can settle down, we can use some words or read some books and talk about why you're feeling this way, and let me know when I can help you." Because at that point, the anger for the child is truly disorganizing, and they can't take the help from the parent or the caregiver. If they can, you've gotten very lucky, and you can intervene before the full-blown tantrum takes place.
Yeah. Let's go to the phones and go to Michael from
Sure.
New Jersey has a question. Michael, you have a question or an observation?
How are you guys doing
today? We're doing
Good,
okay.
Michael.
What's on your mind?
Well, I'm 47. I was just released from a job today. First time in my life I've ever been fired. I hate to use that word, but that's the reality. So while I negotiated a slight severance package, you know, I have a history. I'm single. I've been in long-term relationships, but kind of secretly, I've had a history of self-destructive behavior, using drugs recreationally, at times of slight depression that I've self-diagnosed. I'm scared that procrastination and dwelling on the circumstances might contribute to me making bad decisions. Usually those decisions are done alone at night in a fit of a loneliness, which borders on anger.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's just there's no one to be angry with or at, right? So I make poor decisions. I recognize that I think exercise and diet and even meditation and some level of omega-3s and supplements might help balance me out a little, but I have a very hard time sticking to routines, and I just wanted to kind of at the very least get some of this off my chest as I'm just starting to process what lies in front of me, and I appreciate your program very much.
Well, thank you, Michael, but you've raised an interesting question, series of questions, actually, in terms of how to understand what your behavior might be as a contributing factor to a pattern, not exclusively. So, Betsy, where do we go with this? Michael raises a number of things that are not foreign to any of us in terms of little bits and pieces. You have some thoughts about it?
Yes, Michael, first of all, you know, it's unfortunate this happened to you at work, but, you know, there's always a silver lining. You may well learn a lot about yourself. You seem very insightful in terms of where you get weak and most vulnerable when the chips are down and you don't have the security of a partner or a long-term relationship. It's very important right now that you don't find yourself in those isolated contexts where you can abuse with drugs or abuse yourself in any way, but rather reach out for psychological help, whether it be in your community, to a psychotherapist, a social worker, to your church, to your temple. You need to find some sort of individual or community support system, since you yourself are insightful enough to know that you are at risk right now for behaviors that are very dangerous for you, and I salute you for being so honest. And perhaps if you begin to take on why you resort to those kind of self-destructive behaviors when life goes this way, you'll be able to make gains so that you will be able to sustain your job. I mean, I don't know the situation here. Maybe there were just too many employees, the economy, who knows? But you are telling us well beyond the job that you find yourself in situations that you know are self-destructive. That's where I'm most concerned. What do you do with your anger now? You're angry, lost the job. It's not good enough to be alone at midnight, furious at your partner or yourself.
Well,
you must get help in your community.
Sure. That kind of situation becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. Michael, do you mind sharing with us a little bit of what you talk about when you say you've made self-destructive choices?
Yeah, I put myself in high-risk sexual encounters, and I've used drugs on particular nights that kind of go hand in hand with the other thing.
Uh-huh.
I cherish life and my siblings, and, you know, I wasn't let go for work for any negative reasons. You know, this was just circumstantial. And
it just stirs things up for you in terms of...
Look, I've never lost a job in my life. If anything, I overcompensate in my professional career and eliminate all the balance in my personal. You know, I work 6 or 7 days. I'm the guy who, you know, if you read reviews, they're always going to say no one works harder than him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so which is also signs of, you know, lack of balance.
Yeah, well, that's what you're suggesting, that it's filling a hole, a void in your life.
Absolutely.
So, Michael, look, this is not brain surgery right now. You know that something's missing.
That's right.
You know, how have you tried to go about doing? Obviously, you've taken the courageous step to call us. You've taken the courageous step.
I think it's very hard for me to meet someone when you don't feel good about maybe where you are financially or professionally in your life. It just, you know, I'm not the same confident, well-settled adults that I could be. And I've been, you know, looking for that for a long time.
Michael, with all due respect, I don't buy it. I don't buy it. I don't buy the fact that that alone is the distinction. Is that the reason why you have had difficulties? I'll just try to put it as diplomatically as I can. Had difficulties in making connections or contacts or reaching out to other people, either in a romantic way or friendly way.
I don't have a problem reaching or connecting. I'm in sales most of my career.
Yeah.
So, you know, talking to people and interacting is never the problem.
So
or meeting someone that is at my level or above, you know, that's where I take the easy route, and I'll spend time wasting time with people that I know won't be a long-term fit in my life.
You know what that sounds like to me, Michael, and forgive me if I'm going too far overboard.
Okay.
Without,
I appreciate
what it sounds to me is that there is a bit of shame that's involved and a tremendous amount of insecurity in your own belief in yourself. And that is that leads to a problem with intimacy. I don't mean to give, you know, some sort of simple recipe.
That's a fair assessment. I mean, it's part of what I think I would agree with.
You know, very often when people say that work is their salvation and they're the guy that works 6 to 7 days and gets the best write-up, it's wonderful on one hand because it's keeping you integrated and organized and functional. On the other hand, it's masking what you very well know is deficient, and that is a sense of self-confidence that allows you to pursue the kinds of healthy relationships that you're looking for. So you're very candidly saying you're having not healthy, if not destructive, relationships. Again, I really encourage you to reach out for some kind of therapy, group therapy, individual therapy, where you can begin to look at where is your self-concept so compromised? What are the issues? How can you begin to address them so that a young 27-year-old talented salesman can get back on his feet and have healthy relationships?
Try 47.
Okay.
Oh, 47. Okay. That was wishful thinking on my part. Okay. Even more important, Michael.
Yeah. Well, look, Michael, let me ask you something. What led to the courage to reach out here, to call here, to be able to talk about things that are really quite personal? And why can't you translate that energy and that courage into reaching out to a therapist in a more intimate setting, admittedly?
Yeah, I can. I think I've always been concerned about the expense.
There you go again with expense. You know what? How's it working for you, being concerned about the expense? It's not working.
You can go to your local hospital, walk into the outpatient.
Offline, would you or someone on your team be able to maybe direct me to a cost-effective way to
Michael, where are you?
Someone in my area.
How close to Manhattan? How close to Manhattan are you?
I'm in central New Jersey.
Oh, you're in good shape.
Yeah, you got plenty of places. You know what we will do? Why don't you check on our website?
That's right.
We will do is put up a number of issues, including Betsy Scher Levy's office and place in Manhattan, as well as the NYU clinics, which may be able to screen for, you know, maybe a sliding scale about the cost for psychotherapy and so forth. I mean, as you well know, as everybody knows, the whole business about medical reimbursement and insurance and so forth is a little bit problematic these days. But there are
ways to do it.
Diplomatically so.
Well said.
But I think that what you really need to face, Michael, is the fact that you have garnered the energy and courage to call us. Obviously,
I have these conversations with myself every day.
No. You and yourself have gotten to the end of your discussions together. What you need is another person.
Right. You've become too friendly, and yourself. You need one of us to become your friend and advisor and helper as well.
Michael, I'm telling you, we're both telling you from our experience, from listening to you, that there is a potential light at the end of the tunnel, and it's not in the old joke, the train coming at you.
That's really right. Is
a light at the end of the tunnel, but you have to give it a shot.
Right. Yep. The next step's an important one for
Michael. We'll put some information up on our website, okay?
Thanks for calling in.
Thanks for the call, Mike. Our number is 1-877-698-3627. Lori, we will put stuff up on the website, right, for that kind of situation. And let's go to Sarah from Texas. Sarah, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi, Sarah.
Hello. I have a quick question.
Okay.
I have my older sister has a son. He's just over 1 year old. And the relationship that they had was a disaster, for lack of better words. So she moved back in with my parents.
You're going in and out with your phone. Your sister, are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, better now. Your sister has a 1-year-old child. Is that what you said?
Yes.
And go ahead.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah.
And she has moved back in with our parent, but that's she has some real social issues. Her, she's extremely low self-esteem. on a man to be in her life. And we all agree, everyone in the family agrees that she should talk to a psychiatrist about these issues. But
everyone except one. Yeah.
The most important.
Yeah. I'm sorry?
Everybody except one agrees.
Yes, yes. Everyone, no one has actually directly spoken to her because she has a history of, like, angry outbursts and things like that. So I think it's kind of, how do we approach the situation?
So it's like walking on eggshells. You're tiptoeing around.
Right.
She's the 800-pound gorilla in the room that anybody's afraid to confront. Is that correct?
Yes.
Betsy,
yes,
it sounds like...
I will tell you...
Yeah, go ahead.
Can I add? She is living in the same house with my parents, but she will not allow them to see her son because she is afraid that her son likes my mother more.
Oh, well, that's an important thing to add because that adds another dimension to your sister's psyche and psychology. Let's throw this around a little bit. Betsy, this sounds like it's right up your alley.
It really is. You know, your sister choosing to move back in with your parents because she can't parent your nephew well. And then at the same time, not letting your mother, father, whatever it was, see the child after she's choosing to move back in their home shows you right then how terribly confused and insecure she really is. What we see, Sarah, with the 800-pound gorilla in the room is that kind of control, that pushing everybody away by your angry outbursts can be turned around to be seen as sort of screaming out for help. If you're going to remain afraid of her angry outbursts, nothing will change. And if your parents tolerate not seeing the child, and because the child will like the grandparent more, nothing will change. Someone needs to say, if you live here, we all see one another. We interact as a family. If you live here, we all talk to one another. And maybe you don't all have to attack her at once, but whoever has the best rapport with her can say, okay, we're here, we're safe, your child's safe, we're willing to help you. But to help us help you, you must get some help for yourself. It sounds very important for your nephew. Oh, my goodness, yes. And thank goodness he does have you and his grandparents and his mother. But really, intervention is essential here.
You know, Sarah,
that's why everyone's afraid for the baby.
Well, you know what? Let's make a distinction between being concerned for the baby or being afraid of acting. I think this stirs up in me almost an angry response. What the blank you think is going on here?
Right.
You come in here, you give us a message that you want help, but you don't want help. We are not going to be intimidated or blackmailed by emotion.
Right.
If you want help, we will be more than happy to do it, even on your terms. But we will not just sit here and watch this happen.
And further the pathology and dysfunction, frankly.
Now what happens? Has anybody tried any kind of... I understand everybody's tiptoeing around. So everybody's afraid at this point because your sister has established a kind of pattern that really says, stay away, I'm going to bite, you know?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Yeah, she acts very friendly, but... if you say the wrong thing, she flips just immediately. And then it's angry and she's yelling and she's crying and it's a mess.
Yeah, well, look, first of all, it's it's not humanly possible to constantly be saying the perfect thing, particularly for someone or to someone who is so sensitive and you don't even know what their agenda is. So you cannot do that. And I think that has to be laid out. You don't have to cure her, but you do have to say what the limits are and, you know, what the rules of the game are. And the rules of the game right now, I don't mean to be heaping it on. I know this is difficult for you and your family. But the rules of the game now are being played by you and your family, by your sister's rules. That's not going to work. It's just not going to.
Exactly. You're right.
No, I, Sarah, I know I'm right. You got it.
One thing about Dr. Aronoff, we know he's right.
Right.
He's definitely right.
Yeah. And by the way, even when I'm wrong, I'm right.
He's right.
That's right. But Sarah, but you really do have to talk seriously about this. Is painful. This is not easy. Maybe the three of you, your parents and yourself, want to consult with a therapist first to be guided in terms of how to approach this. Maybe even to do what's been called an intervention.
Intervention. Yeah. That's our favorite word.
Because it's not easy to do. But the fact is, here's the takeaway message from your call, and I really appreciate you calling. The takeaway message is you can't knuckle under to rules that are crazy and are self-defeating in and of themselves.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yes, sir, you're right.
All right. Now that I'm right, now that we've established that I'm right, what are you going to do about it, Sarah? Talk with your parents about, you know, if you want to call back with your parents in tow to talk about this, and, you know, certainly Betsy Sherlevy knows the kinds of strategies and the kinds of interventions that at least can be attempted. Whether they work or not, that's a little bit of a matter of trial and error. But there's got to be trial and error. Otherwise,
that's right.
The status quo is not going to be sufficient.
And sometimes you do have to test out various strategies and applaud yourselves when you find one that works.
Now, in terms of dealing with your sister, I mean, we don't know enough about her or your relationship with her. That also may be an avenue, you know, and maybe the starting point is, look, I care about you very much. What do you want from me? I mean, that kind of pleading, soft approach to opening up a discussion. I don't know whether that would work or not, but it's just something that occurs to me right now. There are a number of options, Sarah, but the key is they have to be tried thoughtfully, respectfully, but tried nonetheless. Okay, Sarah? We got
to take. So
you're welcome.
Okay, good luck.
Thank you for the call. We're going to have to take a break. Our number is 1-877-698-3627. We are talking in this first hour about anger, about the whole range, ranging from annoyance and rage, from extremes of one sort or another to a slow burn, from the active anger to the passive. Look, we all dealt with passive aggressive behavior, if you know what I mean. The person who, with a smile, you ever watch Fargo? You know, the movie, it's a perfect example of some examples of passive-aggressive behavior. Yes, smile, and in the meantime, stealing from your back pocket or
that's
whatever
right.
else. So we can talk about that whole business, the whole spectrum of anger, how to deal with it. And I know you all have the experiences of dealing with excessive anger in yourselves or in others. And the question is, how can we as a community, that is the radio community here, shed some light on how to approach this? Stay with us. This is The Psychiatry Show. I'm Dr. Michael Aronoff. My guest in studio is Dr. Betsy Sherlevy, licensed clinical psychologist and an expert in dealing with just these kinds of problems. Our number is 1-877-698-3627. You have time to get on the phone right now while we take a break, and we'll be right back after this break.
This is Dr. Radio, Sirius XM 81, and on the Sirius XM app for smartphones.
Sounds a little too celebratory about anger, doesn't it, Betsy?
Yes.
I'm Dr. Michael Aronoff. We're back. This is The Psychiatry Show. Our number is 1-877-698-3627. My guest in studio is Dr. Betsy Sherlevy, licensed clinical psychologist. knowledgeable about the whole spectrum of dealing in a psychological environment with the various kinds of interactional and personal problems that may come up. So take advantage of it. Give us a call, 1-877-698-3627. Even though we're focusing right now on anger, there are other issues that do come up, even in the context of anger or whatever. One of the things that you may be wrestling with is the issue of displays of anger, you know, how to deal with them. I mean, sometimes people display anger in order to influence, you know, to sort of manipulate us as a display of power. But do you ever look at the image of a cornered animal? A cornered animal, you know, is driven into a corner by the chasing hunting dogs. And what does it do? It eventually turns around and bares its teeth. The anger, so-called, with the animal. What is that? It is really fueled by fear. And I think that we sometimes have to examine the fact of, if we're dealing with somebody who is irrationally angry, what might they be afraid of? A little speculative, but Betsy, I mean, that's the kind of thing that we, in therapeutic sessions, always consider. But let's go back to the phone, shall we?
Yes.
To Anne from California. Anne, you're on the air.
Hello.
Anne, it sounds like you're in the ocean in California.
Yeah.
I'm in a car.
Okay.
Is it going to be all right?
It's going to be all right as long as you're driving safely and
hands free.
It is. That's why it sounds like I'm in an ocean.
Okay.
I apologize.
Okay, what's on your mind, Anne?
All right, so I have an adult stepdaughter with whom I've been mom to since he was about 3 years old, and he has displayed anger towards me, but doesn't admit that to anyone else, and it's a game.
And excuse me,
yes.
Is this something new?
Pardon me?
Is this something new, her display of anger toward you, singling you out?
On and off for probably the last 10 years.
Okay.
Since she was in her early 20s.
Okay.
And her biological mother came back into her life in her later teen years, and it was... I don't know if that had anything to do with it, but now she has a baby, and she makes out that I don't want anything to do with this child, and I try to call and be a part of this child's life, and she says that I don't, and it's gotten to the point where I include other family members in my text messaging to her, so that they can see that I am doing my best to try and be a part of her life.
Uh-huh.
Not allowing me to.
Yeah.
It's manipulative action on her behalf, I feel. And I don't know what her anger is towards me. And the other caveat here is that I'm getting angry towards her because...
Of course.
I feel as though she's turning my other children, as well as my husband, against me, because they're all looking at me saying, why don't you want to be a part of her life?
This is a rather complicated.
Yes.
I'm not sure I understand what the dynamics are here.
Yeah.
But simple question. Have you asked your stepdaughter what's up?
Yes.
And what does she say?
There's no problem. There's nothing. What's wrong with me? Why am I asking if something's wrong?
And you say, because you say, I'm not interested, but I am interested, and I keep on having the door slammed in my face, or at least that's what it seems like to me. And what does she say to that?
No, that's not true.
Well, there's certainly a disconnect here, because if she's very angry with you for not being involved in her child's life, such that your husband and your own children are getting angry at you, then we're missing something. Because why does she have the power to get your own children and your husband angry at you if, in fact, you really are making these very lovely, consistent gestures towards her child? You brought up her mother coming back into her life. What were the circumstances of you becoming her stepmother? You know, wherein does the anger lie that you've become the target? This sounds like a very complicated situation, and certainly one where the other family members need to know what's what for sure. Is there any light that you can shed on this that helps us out?
That I felt her father and I have been married for almost 30 years, and I felt that we raised her along with her three other siblings, and they had a good upbringing, and her mom wasn't consistent. She would call and say, I'm going to see you this weekend, and then not show up. And later, as she grew older, there are two out of the four that are my stepchildren, but they call me mom. I've always been the mom. And as they grew later in their teens, they realized that their mom was who she was, that she would call and not show up. And my husband nor myself ever badmouthed her mom to them. We didn't feel as though we did. And then their mom came back in their life, and they just with grain of salt.
And let me ask you something. How did their mom coming back into their lives affect your husband?
He kind of threw up his hands and said, here we go. Meaning that their mother wasn't responsible, wasn't reliable.
So she showed up again, and your husband says, oh, here we go again. She's going to say she's showing up, but it's going to be unpredictable.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah. And then what happened?
As they got into their early 20s, she became more responsible, more reliable,
mm-hmm.
their mother.
And what affected that? Yeah.
Show up.
What effect did that have on your husband?
He was happy because it made these girls happy.
And did that change your relationship, first of all, with him, and secondly, with them?
I didn't think so with them. No, it did not with him, and I didn't believe it did with them.
Did you feel jealous? Did you feel jealous, by the way, when she
not
became
at all.
No. Really?
No, I didn't. I feel as though I'm very blessed because I don't feel as though I'm a jealous person. And I think I believe that's something you're born with.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
Well, what do you mean something you're born with? I didn't.
That there are people that have that genetic gene, perhaps, that makes them jealous.
That makes them what, jealous?
That, yes.
Uh-huh.
I don't feel that I've really got jealousy.
Well, let me tell you something from my experience, and I don't mean to be a wise guy about it, but I haven't met a human being, or for that matter, a pet or an animal that doesn't have jealousy as some part of their spectrum of possible emotional reactions under certain circumstances. Now, it may be that you weren't jealous as a consequence of that, but to say that you've never experienced jealousy, well, that's a very interesting phenomenon.
No, that's not what I'm saying. I definitely have. I just don't feel that I am typically a jealous person, And my daughter goes, I was very happy to have her mother be a part of her life because she always has yearned for that, I felt.
All right, so Betsy, look. This is obviously a very complicated situation.
Very.
And the details the devil is in the details here.
That's
but
right.
But let's approach it, make some suggestions about how
sure.
to approach this kind
you
of
You know,
thing.
I agree with Michael, the devil's in the details. But let's just think about it this way. You raise four children, two biological children, two stepchildren. You do a beautiful job. You put all your efforts into it. At one point, their mother's uninvolved and disappointing. And as she changes and grows, she becomes very active and much more of an accepting figure. Well, of course, then you lose some of the devotion of the stepdaughter that you've raised because her biological mother is no longer, quote unquote, the bad mother and you the good mother. So this natural splitting of the bad mother and the good mother is no longer in effect. And all of a sudden, maybe there's two good mothers, which might be hard to sustain. And it sounds like there's a great deal of displacement. She might be angry at her mother for the early years and now taking that out on you because she has the relationship with her mother that in it really gives her the security to now show her anger towards you and perhaps her jealousy in regard to you and her father and her losing her biological mother for all that period of time. If she's getting something from showing that you're not paying attention to the child, just think about that dynamic. It's as if she's reenacting her own life. Who is paying attention to me? Which mommy pays attention to me and which mommy is bad? So there's a lot of complicated dynamics here that almost could be dealt with well in a family context if you could do some sort of family counseling, if in fact your husband is open to that. And Michael's question about how did this affect your marriage and the loyalty of your husband when his first wife reenters the picture as now the good mother is a huge question. This is very complicated. I really empathize with you in terms of how to be the ever-changing stepmother and wife, but I don't think you're going to get out of hot water until there's much further exploration of what this means.
And let me make a further suggestion for you to consider, and that is to talk to your daughter in the following way. I love you. And I've loved you for 20 years or whatever the time period has been. And you know what? Maybe I'm reading too much into this, but I feel like there is some sort of friction or pushback or some sort of difficulty that I'm having. Can we sort that out, you and me? Mm-hmm. Just as a way of reaching out softly. And does that make any sense?
Yes. Yes. I think that...
You start with... I'm sorry. You start with the following statement. I love you and I have loved you for
always.
So long. Always.
And I always will.
Yeah.
This is upsetting to me, the friction I feel.
Yeah. And if I'm misreading it, I just want to let you know. You know, and you open it up. You don't dictate anything other than that. This is an open-ended inquiry.
Okay, and what is your suggestion for my own feelings of anger towards her as it continues?
Well, that's a very interesting question. That's a very interesting question because when any of us feel impotent or unable to handle a situation or feel pushed around,
right.
It is a natural experience to feel angry. So what I'm suggesting is by reaching out, by attempting to master the situation, by being active rather than passive, that may help you with your own anger.
Do you feel some loss of her?
Absolutely.
And yes. That's something else. This, and that's
you
something
can tell
else
her
said.
That right there.
Absolutely.
I mean, she will hear that, I hope, quite lovingly, that you miss her and that you feel you're losing the intimacy with her. That's probably just what she needs to hear.
So in another, I have, and it goes well for a month, and then all of a sudden we're back to square one.
No, you're not back to square one. You know what? You haven't left square one. You still stay at square one for a period of time. It takes time to get past square one. This is not a setback. This is a process.
That's right. Just keep going.
And you got some stuff to practice. give us a call back and tell us how it's going, okay? Thank you for the
call. Thanks for calling.
Our number is 1-877-698-3627. Let's go to Kelly from Michigan. Kelly, you're on the air.
Hi, Kelly.
Oh, hi. Thank you.
Sure.
I have a 14-year-old daughter who, as a child, was very shy outside of the home, but at home, she is very much a bully. We are walking on eggshells to try to just stay out of her way. And now that she is an adolescent, it seems to be even worse. And now at school, where before she was very shy and had maybe one friend at a time, now she doesn't really seem to have any bonds that I'm seeing. And then there seems to be boys and a lot of high risk behavior starting to happen.
Kelly, let me interrupt you for a second because we're going to have to take a break. Can you hang on until after the break?
I can.
Great. Well, and the others of you who are hanging on the phone, stay there because Dr. Levy is going to stay with me, and we're going to continue the discussion. I know there are a lot of you waiting, but I will get to all of you after the fact. We just have about 3 minutes left. So, Kelly, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I did want to orient the audience to that. In any case, let's continue. So what's happened with you and your daughter? Kelly, are you there? Kelly, I guess we've lost Kelly. I guess when I interrupted for that. I think we're taking a break. So what we are talking about is we're talking about anger. We'll be back with Kelly after the break. We will also be back with the rest of you after the break. But talking about anger and the effects of it and the effects of how to deal with it with regardless of who it is, whether it's an anger inside yourself, whether it is an issue about being bullied by someone else, how better to deal with that, whether it's an issue about what we're getting into with Kelly in terms of preteen and teenagers and the transition that goes on there. Betsy, do you have any particular thoughts about this to begin with? I mean, just in a minute thought before we go to
sure.
The break.
You know, before the story unfolded in terms of now the behavior with boys in adolescence, my first thought was that, of course, this young woman had too much power at home and too much control at home for a family to be walking on eggshells and really not addressing her behavior as a child when she then goes out into the community and is shy and polite. But what we're now starting to hear, Michael, is something more complicated, that she's also showing her pain outside now in the community by her acting out behaviors. And perhaps we really need to understand what's been going on all along.
So we will get back to that and discuss all the aspects of, well, as many aspects as we can about anger and the questions that you all have. Those of you standing in line, keep standing there because we'll get to you when we come back. After this brief break, you are listening to The Psychiatry Show. I'm Dr. Michael Aronoff, and my guest in studio is Dr. Betsy Sher-Levy, licensed clinical psychologist. We're talking about anger, but we're not limited to talk about just anger, but the consequences of it and other aspects of the interactional problems that people can get into in the intimacy of a family situation, in other kinds of relationships as well. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.